Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn, and I run the services activities at medcomsnetworking.com. So, services, information sharing, and so on for people who work in and around the global community, people who work in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, and so on, and the associated businesses. And indeed, also, we do a lot for people who would like to know more about business and would like a job as a medical writer, account manager, or whatever. So you'll find lots of information, if that's your interest, over at firstmedcomsjob.com. These webinars are great fun. I've been doing it for a long time now. We've covered all sorts of topics. We record speakers, presenters, panelists, and we post the video recordings at Network Pharma TV. So you'll find several hundred videos now covering all sorts of topics relevant to the business. What we're doing today is we're having a bit of fun in some ways. I came back from my New Year holiday and got a bit caught up with ChatGPT. And the guys online with me, the panelists, were having some conversations, and we just sort of thought 2 weeks ago, we just thought let's have a webinar, let's have an informal discussion, and in 10 days we've got hundreds of you signing up. So it's difficult to imagine many of you haven't noticed what's going on in the last couple of weeks. Lots of questions, I'm sure. My message to you is have a play with it, because whatever the rights and wrongs, whatever it will or won't do, have a play with it, because it can be quite mind-blowing. My little story, for what it's worth, and what got me hooked slightly, was I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. I signed in. I asked it to define Medcoms. It's an uncreative starting point from Llewellyn, but basically define Medcoms, and it immediately came back with 150 words or so, which was a perfectly good explanation of medical communications and Medcoms. And I just went, oh. And it's the immediacy which does catch people out, I think, when they start. Okay. And from there on, you can play and have all sorts of fun and games. There's stuff that you can do, and people are doing it a lot to try and catch it out and prove how it doesn't work. But my goodness, it can work in some areas. And I just would like more people having a play with it, more people thinking about what happens in MedComms. And the four people I've got on today have, I think, got some interesting perspectives and certainly a lot of specialism and expertise behind them. So we're going to have this conversation. Audience members online today, please share your comments. We're going to go in alphabetical order and just ask the panelists to introduce themselves. You can go and Google them, you can link in with them on LinkedIn and so on. So I'm not asking for a long session here, as it were, from each of them, but a brief introduction, what your expertise is and your position, and give us a couple of top line thoughts on ChatGPT and what we're doing. And then we'll go with an open conversation. Martin, you're first in the order.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you for organizing as well, and welcome everybody. Let's see, we've got 467 already, so that's great. My name is Martin Delahunty. I'm an independent publishing consultant. I'm a former global director with Springer Nature and the Nature Publishing Group, former board of trustee member for ISMAP, and I'm currently on a special interest group for MedComms with the European Medical Writers Association. So if you've had any connections with either of those organizations, you may have come across me in terms of giving presentations. And I'm really interested, as everybody is, in this topic, because you cannot fail to have not seen this unless you're coming from another planet. There's so much talk around ChatGPT, and there's been so much talk amongst medical publication professionals and medcoms around artificial intelligence for a number of years. And so I'm coming at this from just a perspective that I'd formed actually a couple of years ago, because I was asked to write a paper for medical writing. So I wrote a paper called, if you can see it there, Artificial Intelligence: Will We Be Replaced by Robots? And I've had to edit it with my editing red pen. I've had to say, will be replaced by ChatGPT. If you read that article, you'll know that the answer is actually no, we're not going to be replaced by robots. And not to sort of pretext what we're going to talk about here, but I don't feel that ChatGPT is a threat. I think it's more like an opportunity, but certainly the discussion today will be around whether it is actually a threat to our profession. Is it there to support? Is it there to disrupt? Or is it there to replace? So we can have, I think, a good conversation around that. And I think it's important also just to consider that ChatGPT, although we're seeing so much noise around that, part of that is because there's been significant investment in funding. You may have seen that they've had $10 billion worth of investment from Microsoft. Why would Microsoft be interested in ChatGPT? Well, Microsoft have a fantastic search engine called Bing. Do you use Bing? I don't use Bing. Do you use Google? Yes. So one assumption here is that ChatGPT is going to be a threat to Google and to search rather than a threat to any other AI text mining technologies out there. So that might be part of the discussion as well. But I leave it at that because there's going to be so much that we're going to discuss today. I can consider, Peter, 5 or 6 follow-on seminars for you. I'll hand over to Abhishek.
I'm actually going to go to Katya next, yeah?
Katya.
I'm just following the alphabetical order. It's all right. I mean, one of the challenges for this conversation is there's so many different aspects to this. And we just got to, you know, just try and keep a little bit of sense of focus around the sort of medcoms, content management, creation type business. And it is ChatGPT that's got us all excited, but there are lots and lots of other tools and whatever out there. Katya, as a way of leading into you, because you know, and the reason I sort of picked up on what you were doing on LinkedIn was you were comparing it with Jasper and so on. So again, without going too far with this, talk a bit about what your background is and maybe make mention to some of these other tools that I know you've been playing with.
Yes, I'm Katja Martin from Switzerland. I run MedTechSpert. It's an agency specialized in medical writing, mainly scientific medical writing, medical content creation, and content marketing. My background, I am a biomedical engineer, and I have worked in the medical device field for most of my life. That is explaining my technical interest. Also, almost six years ago, I got excited about all the possibilities of online marketing and communication, and I wanted to understand and explore the mechanisms behind, and decided get a degree in digital marketing, and I liked it so much, I got another degree, a postgraduate degree in 2019. So I thought, oh, I'm ready now to convert the world into all digital and all those things. But of course, my customers weren't ready. So I basically bumped back into a lot of medical writing. However, now all this formation and interest in those systems, tools, because digital marketing requires a lot of tools, analytics, strategic, measuring, KPIs, and so on, comes in quite handy now for all medical communication, dissemination, or successful dissemination of clinical research data, of conversations, because of course the communication landscape has changed greatly. People, also driven by COVID-19, go online, they search, they take up information, mostly visual, entertaining bits, and so on. They don't have time, they consume, they want more, they scratch on the surface, and so on. So it comes back to content marketing. The kind of content we provide is, of course, storytelling and video and so on. However, for that, we already in content marketing used a lot of tools to generate them or little helpers. So when ChatGPT came out, I thought, very good, because of course it's free at the moment, it's still free, and all the other systems which are out there, AI assisted tools, they are many of them subscription based. Although it's often not a lot, if you use it on a regular basis and for bigger documents or tasks, it can end up, you know, you need a lot of things. You need a paraphraser and Grammarly and Research Rabbit and maybe Distiller and Elicit, Identicate, you name it. Copy AI, I like. Jasper also is quite pricey and it adds up. I am clearly in favor of those tools because they facilitate the workflow. They make inconvenient things easier they provide. When you just think about text, a good starting point. Also, ChatGPT does it if you do it right. So basically, it's all about engineering your prompt. That means you have to give really exact instructions to ChatGPT, who you are. Like you say, act as a, then tell exactly what you want, then say, in addition to this, you should do this, the 10 points there, conclude with that, you define the audience and so on. Then it will give really good results, depending, of course, on where you use it. However, I have been at the same time very, I don't want to say disappointed by the results which it returns. So it's a starting point, but it will not deliver an end product, as to say. It is trained and stops. This version, which is available to us, to the regular crowd, is trained on data up to early 2022, and it shows, you know, whatever is newer, it is not incorporated. However, it is great for all kinds of summaries and so on. We will talk about it later.
I think it's important, sorry I'm interjecting, but I think it's really important to emphasize that ChatGPT is a work in progress, that it makes very clear if you sign in that it can produce erroneous results and so on. This is a window on what's happening, isn't it? And some of the discussions you see and some of the fault finding that you can see people trying is sort of unfair, because it's sort of like, well, if I caught it out, then it's obviously a rubbish product, which isn't the point. And I think we all know that GPT-4 is coming. You know, the background at the moment is GPT-3.5 is being used to drive the chatbot. Version 4 is coming. We all think it's within weeks. We don't know. I don't know anybody else that knows. But if anybody does have any information out in the audience, please share it. But yeah, and that's like 1,000 times more powerful or something. So it's important when you're playing with this to understand that this is, you know, a playing ground at the moment. For everyone sort of agreeing, if I say anything posh, then tell me, okay. I just want to move things on a little bit, sorry, because Stephen, I'm going to bring you in. And you've got an enormous amount, ever since I've known you, you've been excited about patients accessing information, medicines information. You've done some amazing work with big databases of information about side effects and drug interactions and so on. And you're a lot more techie than me. So say a few words about your background, and maybe give us a little bit of a hint of how all this is all happening behind the scenes, yeah?
Okay, thank you, Pete. Hello, everyone. Yes, my name's Steve Mott. I am the founder of a company called Farm Advisor, and we are producing a clinical tool for clinicians, funny enough, which gives them access to the FDA adverse event database, so they can check in real time the preponderance of drug side effects that aren't on data sheets or drug labels. So our estimate is about 87% of all side effects that have been recorded on these vast databases of voluntary reporting are never put in front of a clinician. They never have access to them. Anyway, that's another story. So this system has been many years in the making. I remember in the 1980s working on things like Prolog, programming in Logic, where we were trying to build expert systems that by comparison were terribly crude. And then we went through the sort of object-oriented programming phase with Lisp. And finally, we've got to a point now, some 300 years later, where I think this is truly a breakthrough. And I would caution everyone not to make conclusive judgments on what they're seeing now. As Peter has said, this is a trial system. Okay, they put it out to get exactly the feedback they're getting. They put it out knowing, I believe, that it would invent stuff now and then, which it now doesn't. They retracted that. So this is a remarkable technology. The other thing to say is that it is not sentient. So it's not at the moment anyway.
Not yet.
Neural network stuff, which does make emergent concepts possible. So just quickly, three main points. One is in the system itself. So it's not sentient, it's generative. It creates the text that you're seeing through a statistical analysis of these 170 billion tokens, which are basically words or components of words. And then it statistically analyzes those and tries, well, does predict what the next word or part of a word might be in its responses. And this is all happening through a neural network in real time. So every time you put a question in, it's running through that neural network. It's not trawling stuff out of the internet. As Katja said, it's it's only updated to the end of 21. This is one of the issues they had, which is that it's not updated in real time at the moment. Okay, so they have to sort of train it, which is the P in GPT, pre-trained. I've covered the G, the generative bit. It then creates responses to your questions based on the statistical probability of the next word or next part of a word coming out. Now, currently, as Peter said, it has around 170 billion tokens, these words or chunks of words. GPT-4 will have 170 trillion. Okay, it's a factor of 1,000 increase. And believe me, in these sort of networks systems, that is not just 1,000 times bigger, it's multiples of that. It's going to be truly awesome, I think. So the other bit of this is it has this natural language processing component on top. So the bit I've just described is GPT, the generative pre-trained transformer, the transformer being the neural network. And ChatGPT is merely a sort of neural and a natural language processing interface put on top of GPT. So we can use GPT now. You can get a license. You can build an interface from your application to it, and you can start building in the use of GPT into your applications. Now, we haven't done that yet. We will, because one of the things I find is building systems for clinicians is that there's an awful lot of complex words, as you all very well know. And just putting a link into Google is, that means someone's got to go and do research and what's good. So we're looking at this saying, if I get a complex or rare or unusual term, which might be a condition, a drug, some factor, then I can use GPT to pull out that kind of response. And the reason I'm confident we can do that reliably is that you can create your own hosted domain, if you like, within GPT. So, for example, we could take all the SPCs or drug labels and put them, which are authorized by the companies, and put them into a hosted system, which would then break it all down. And the really interesting thing is you don't just post responses to questions that you've decided should be put in there, you know, the Q&A stuff. You can actually let the system just do it itself if you are confident that it's producing results. So I think this is a role for the MedCons community in future, which might be the sort of the arbiters of what is good quality. So I'll finish there. I could go on, as we could, all could, no doubt. I would just say, my view of these things is never rush to a judgment. Let's wait and see what GPT-4 is. I understand why people are sort of negative towards it, but I think it's inevitable. Don't push it away. It's going to become part of our lives, just as radio disrupted, just as TV disrupted, and the internet's disrupted. I think this will soon just disappear into the background. And as Martin said, now Microsoft are investing heavily in it. And I think OpenAI are very well aware of the snafus that are in here, and they will start ironing them out. Because the great thing about this thing is you can retrain it. You can send it to AI class and get it to modify its output. I'll stop there, Pete.
I'm going to stop you and move on to Abhishek. I'm watching the conversations in the chat rooms and so on, and there's a bit of a segue into your other show. There's chat about the plain language summaries, the PLS plain language summaries, and the idea that you can take a paper and you can ask ChatGPT to basically summarize it in plain language, okay, which is a mushrooming business within the MedComms community. And lots of writers employed to produce PLS. Abhishek, you posted in the new year, I think it was just in the new year, that you had challenged GPT to produce a PLS. Tell us the story, tell us about yourself and a little bit of the story, because I think this opens up a whole interesting area, one area in which maybe this sort of technology is going to be transformative, possibly quicker than people are going to be able to fully appreciate, but I don't know. Go on, Abhishek, go on.
Sure, Peter, thank you. And Stephen kind of set it up very nicely, and I can see on the chat Trishna and Anna talking about it. So maybe a bit about myself and then talking about my experience. So I'm part of the global medical cell and gene team at Novartis. And well, this is a fairly new role I've stepped into as of December. My core area of expertise is in scientific communications for over 15 years now. So name the role, I've probably done it, writing strategy events, MedEd, whatnot. And then I think my interest, that part of my interest also, you know, the ISMAP authorship algorithm, which was rolled out last year. So I was leading that work stream. That also ties in nicely to some of the questions I have seen online being discussed about authorship for ChatGPT on papers. I'm also part of the Medical Affairs Professional Society focus group on MedComms. So essentially, I can always tie together MedComms and medical affairs. My career, my interest area in the recent years have expanded into more looking at how patient involvement can be improved, how can they be partners and collaborators. And from that angle, I am exploring how health literacy could empower patients in contributing to shared decision-making about their own disease areas or their lifestyle. And from that is what I was thinking over the Christmas break when I was in India. And I thought, let's try out a paper. And I, you know, with ChatGPT, and I put in a link. There was a little of a shove and, you know, pull and push, because it takes a bit of time to figure out which paper, because it can't read a link or a DOI. You have to just kind of find a way to mention the author and the paper. So it did pick it up. And what I wanted to see is if you have experienced Scholarly, there's already a service there where you mention a paper, and Scholarly actually does a nice knowledge card with a summary of the paper. And I just wanted to see how does ChatGPT kind of work? Is it better? Is it different? So, and both are text-based, there's no visual involved. So I tried it out, asking it to do it in plain language, which I posted. I then tried out, you know, by grade, by readability, by scientific or non-scientific audiences, physicians, but not experts, and those kind of things. And it went, I would say it kept modifying it, it kept refining it. Of course, then when I said, give me more information, it generated a totally fictitious list of references. And I thought it was my mistake, because I clicked on it and they took me to different papers which existed but was not related, which made me a little bit cautious about it. And then over a period of that week, I realized they blocked that feature, so it can no more misguide you when it comes to citations, etc. So which made me feel they are keeping an eye out for these kind of biases. And I got some questions on LinkedIn about whether the plain language output that I got, was it of good quality? You know, was it serving its purpose? You know, I think we ourselves as humans haven't nailed it yet. So, you know, I think it's going to be hard for a ChatGPT to do it at this stage, but maybe it will get there. So, you know, at this point, and this was one of my closest interactions with a large language model. You know, I've done it in bits and pieces, but I was getting hooked, to be honest. And at this point, I think of it like, and I read this somewhere, of it being a caddy to, like it is to a golfer, you know? So it nudges you, you are the expert, it nudges you, you nudge it back, you kind of consult, you kind of try and get the best you know, out of it and see what fits you. You know, the interface is obviously the chat functionality I found is a different level altogether, because it's trying to give you things, asking, trying to respond the way you want. And I think that it has the breadth. It has, I think Stephen mentioned about the training data set. But I'm also curious about how it behaves as we get to newer literature, newer information, which it may not find, you know, past references to. I also did try out DALL-E, which is their text-to-visual tool. And I thought that was, it kind of was very interesting. If you haven't tried that out, try it out. And I have to give a shout out to Rob Kirsten from my organization, because he and I had a chat about this. And then Gaurav told me about MetaFarm, which is on, again, position focus. So I think it's getting there. Site has set up a verification tool on top of ChatGPT. So I think everybody's trying to pitch in. Some people are trying to break it, which I think is good at this stage, you know, trying out how do you avoid this? How do you try and find a fit for, you know, a gap to try and get things done? I think the governance models, frameworks will have to be rewritten. I think at this point, the idea should be to see what this tool can do, and not necessarily you know, where it's failing, but to see what it can do. And I'm curious. You know, it's learning, it's picking up. You asked the same question. Somebody said, you know, it's not answering the same question the same way every time. And I think that is a good thing, because it's learning. It's kind of incorporating our feedback, giving us something that's better every time. So I'm going to look forward to seeing what we do with it and where we get to with this one.
Okay, so again, I'm trying to keep an eye. There's a lot of discussion going on, and we're not going to be able to pick out a lot of these individual bits and pieces. So we're going to go with some themes here. But let's sit with the PLS theme, and let's be a bit provocative. Karen's come in. She actually posted a number of questions. I can't keep up with them all, Karen. But Karen's posted the basic question. Let's be a bit provocative here. You know, will sponsors be impressed or horrified that agencies use ChatGPT for the first draft of a PLS? Or would you go further? Would the sponsor go, well, I don't need the agency anyway, we'll just produce a PLS? Let's start with you, Abhishek, just as the client who's used to spending a lot of money on generating sort of content. What would you say? Yep.
Well, my first reaction to this is the format at this point. I mean, not even going into the capability, that's secondary. The first bit is, you know, my position on plain language summary is just to do less text and more visual. And I think at this point, it's not ChatGPT alone cannot do it. You know, whether we want to combine with DALL-E is a different story. The second piece is in the current capabilities that I've seen, I think it can't be, you know, you can't bypass a human to kind of do everything on ChatGPT, because I, you know, you need a prompt. You know, it's like a prompt engineer. You need to kind of also fine tune how you're prompting it to do things, and whether we have the time to do it is a different story. And also because we are now co-creating plain language summaries with patients, so where do they fit? And if you go to ChatGPT and say, hey, generate something for me. So at this point, given where we are, I wouldn't say that it's ready or we are ready to get to a stage where, you know, we are going to ask it to do it. Data privacy, another aspect, copyrights, a whole gamut of things. So right now, no. We can see where this goes.
But you can get a taste of what's coming, can't you? Katya, as a writer, if I can put you in that sort of niche for the moment, how do you feel about it? And does, because a lot of people are talking about this as being, if nothing else, it's a great tool to give me a first draft. And then, of course, I come in as the human and I fix it and I tweak it and it's, you know, add a bit of, you know, personality and so on. Does that work in practice? Firstly, I know a lot of writers who say it's easier to start from scratch anyway, rather than adapt someone else's manuscript. But also, again, I just question, you know, from a reader's point of view, you know, if it's easy to produce something that looks quite good, is that enough for some people as a writer? So do we need to, you know, it's just like, it's fine, let's just move on. What's your view as a writer, if I can put you in that position? Gotcha.
It still depends. Where the medical writer is, or what his speciality is, because regulatory writing, I can't see it of much use there, to be honest. I see it in educational materials, patient education, training materials, summaries, all those things for medical writing, the classical medical writing, ChatGPT. I am not sure how much it can be trusted. Maybe it can be used for abstracts, which we have seen this week in LinkedIn. We had this paper which were comparing abstract creation by humans and by the machine. You can see how, go back to Peter's contribution, you can see how it did quite well there. So if you have problems writing an abstract or summarize the highlights of your article and so on, you just use it as a tool to or mill it through some of your stuff. But anyways, in strategic publication planning and all this, you need still the medical writer, because you need the strategy. Even for ChatGPT, you have to create the prompt and exactly know what you wanted to do with all the systems. And then at the end, you have to go and sort it out. Whatever it returned, you have to verify if this was correct. And this could actually take longer than writing from scratch, to be very honest with you.
Again, I'm going to interject slightly, because I think it's really important in these discussions, and particularly, so forgive me, but I think we keep, and everyone keeps around me, looking at something like ChatGPT and talking about the stuff that it's not going to be so good at, yeah? And some of what we do, technical writing and all the rest of it, I'm not sure how a GPT-type activity will really solve the problem. It's not going to write the paper for you in the first place based on the data, or maybe it will, but at the moment, I struggle with that. What it can do is a bit like Abhishek's described, take a paper and go, well, okay, here's 500 words that explains it in lay language. And there's lots of writers doing lots of different things. So let's try and talk more about what it does rather than what it can do, if I put it like that, okay? I mean, I when I was messing around with it a few days, I asked it, I said something like, you know, for no good reason at all, you know, explain dyslexia, 500 words for a lay audience. And it just came back to me. And again, the immediacy is something that if you haven't seen it, it blows your mind. And he came back with a very good 500 word explanation, which I understand, I'm no expert, but it was absolutely fine. And I could imagine a proper writer, as it were, going, well, we need to tweak this, blah, blah. But actually it worked perfectly well. And that sort of writing, you know, are people going to be using it without even telling us? And where do you go with the sort of the whole transparency thing? What's interesting in academia, and I don't know a lot about that area, but I see a little bit of it. There's already people writing their homework essays and submitting essays, and a lot of the academics in the course of a week seem to have gone from banning it in New York last week to just going, we're going to embrace it. We're going to encourage people to do this. Train them to prompt the tool and get the work back, and train them to train the tool to give them better and better essays. And we're going to concentrate on their analytical skills, not their ability to write the essay. Does that make any sort of sense? I mean, I think it's been an absolutely dramatic shift in the last week from that point of view. It's a different sort of writing, but you see what I mean? And I'm going to skip around here. Sorry, I'm sort of looking at you and looking. If anyone's completely disagreeing with me, shout at me. Martin, just pick up on this as a publisher. You know, there's all sorts of different sorts of publishing type articles. You know, it's going to be good in some areas and not so good in other areas. But how in publishing are you going to know what's coming through the door, whether it's been supported or written by ChatGPT? We've seen, Karen, in fact, was the first person I saw to highlight a paper with ChatGPT as an author. We've seen information yesterday, today, about in Nature, was it published yesterday, talking about it's ridiculous. Of course, it's not an author. And of course, we all agree with that. But this is all happening very, very quickly. And to come back to my basic question, on the publishing side, you sit there and you've got people who play by the rules and follow GPP and follow all sorts of things and present. And then you've got other people who just go, I can whack a paper out and get it on my CV if I can pass it through. And GPT will do it in a second. I don't have to spend the next week doing it. Again, I'm being slightly flippant, but what's your view, Martin?
No, you're not being flippant, because it raises from a academic and scholarly publishers' point of view. So the publication forums for the medical publication research that's created and authored and published through journals like Lancet, NEJM, and specialist journals. But as a publisher, we are all going to be incredibly concerned about the accessibility, usability, and the ease by which people who wish to produce fraudulent content for financial gain, paper mills, will be further enabled by this. However, there's a sufficient work being done in just investigating the paper mills that are already in existence using text mining tools already to make it easier for them to put together plagiarized work. That concern is just being amplified here by the ChatGPT discussion. It really just brings us back to the challenges within academic publishing around research integrity. Also, the challenge around defining who is an author and what are the ethical and moral requirements for an author. So we are very familiar with good publication practice, GPP 22, which was published last year. You know, the challenge there is to update that relative to this new tool, but we need to understand these tools are already prevalent. It just happens that we are all talking about this one tool. And the problem with particularly open access publications, and so the drive now from particularly pharma medical funders for research is that they wish to make the research open access through an open access publishing model. They wish to produce open data, so they are more seen to be more transparent, and that we accelerate the process of doing good, creating advancing healthcare, creating new interventions, etc. So that's all the good stuff that can happen with having a open access publishing model. But of course, it's a model that's funded by individual funders and articles. So the more articles you publish, the more money you make. And so there's a tension there, which is already there. But I think this will just bring us back to talking about some existential fundamental facts around, I think, authorship is a big question. So we had the Nurse Education and Practice article, editorial. So it's not quite, it's a research article. So, fair play to them. They're using ChatGPT. They've, it's there as the corresponding author. Well, it doesn't, it's not existing as a person. So what?
But they were messing around, weren't they?
Because everybody's talking about Nurse Education Practice, fantastic journal, but it's not Lancet and EJM, but everybody's talking about that. So they got in there, as you did, Peter, early on. You got in on the wave of interest. But what is it to be an author, and what are the obligations that we've defined through GPP 22 and all the iterations of that within the medical publication profession? It's so important to have to be able to stand behind authorship should something in the future come back to haunt you around the data, around the research. We've done great work through GPP and other initiatives to make sure that medical writers are fully accredited as authors, are justified as authors, and we get away from this horrible ghost writer persona that has been there. And yet that will come back now through this conversation, because I think what we will see from publishers is just an influx of fraudulent papers created under the persona of people that don't exist, using a tool like ChatGPT, because it's so easy to use.
But even less so in that way. I'm interested how many people, genuine authors, are just going to use ChatGPT to make their life a lot simpler. Okay, and I'm not sure. I've gone public, whatever that means. Nothing very much. But part of a LinkedIn discussion I joined in with this morning, I just went, look, the genie's out of the bottle. I can't remember what I said. Battle's been lost. Anyone who was resisting this last week, it's happening. Okay, it's out there. people are using this, so now embrace it. And I think that's what I'm picking up in the academia of the last few days. I'm seeing discussions, I'm seeing people issuing policies and so on that go, look, at least tell us you've used it, and it's not a bad thing, and let's help you use it better, sort of thing. And it's just about transparency. And I'll be interested, I don't want to worry anybody, but GPP 2023 might be moving along. I know it's not, but you know what I mean? It's like GPP needs to be thought about now with something like this in mind, sort of thing. You know, there's going to be a flush of policies and guidance and whatever, but in the end someone can use one of these tools in the background, not tell anybody. And then I've gone further in my little comment this morning and gone, actually, what the heck's the point? You know, we don't sit there and go, you know, we've used Word to write this thing up, we haven't used Google or Wikipedia or whatever to research. You know, this is just a tool that people use. And I just think that's what's going to happen. People, and I don't know about you guys, anybody else in my position, I'm not using it every day, but I now have ChatGPT on open beside me. And I do find myself using it a bit, and I'm slightly intrigued about, I'm using it for old things. It's just becoming a tool. Is that, again, I'm looking for nods or disagreements, but see, people, we're going to run out of time.
It's just a tool.
It's just a tool.
It's a tool, yeah.
But it's an amazing, but the potential is, I just think, game-changing tool, right? I know we're going to run out of time in a minute. I would love to be talking, and I know there's just so much chat going on and so many questions. I've got no clue what people are talking about over here. I'm going to bring you back in, Steve. One thing I wanted to pick up on, it's come up in the chat quite a lot, and it's partly in the context of referencing and citations, and people are hearing that ChatGPT is making stuff up and giving you false references and things. That, as I understand it, is being addressed by ChatGPT. But Sparrow, can you just give us a few words on Sparrow and talk about, because that's coming fast, isn't it, from Google? And sorry, I'm putting you on the spot there, slightly, Steve. Do you know enough to give us a few words on what I'm talking about there? You're on mute, mate. You're on mute. You're still on mute. Steve, you're on mute.
Classic, just as well, really. It wasn't worth listening to. I think the main issue here is that GPT, in whatever form you look at it, whether it's DALL-E, whether it's chat, is going to be a commercial product. Okay, you know, Microsoft are paying a lot of money. It costs $3 billion a month. Sorry, $3 million a month to run the current chat GPT. Hence the sort of, you know, you can't use it at the moment. It needs to expand. It needs to be scaled up. It needs to be able to refresh its knowledge base more like in real time instead of every year and a half or whatever. So there's got to be a sound business model behind it. Now, with that will come the obligation to address all these issues like copyright, like, you know, all the legal issues, liabilities, who owns it, why are two bits never the same, because it's learning. So it's actually exposing us to a lot of the sort of undercurrent questions, philosophical and otherwise, about AI. You know, where is the ethics in all of this? So I mean I just don't see any holding this back. It's going to get better. I've seen people actually trying to have an argument with it. Which you know, just leaves me, there's a feedback bit, the thumbs up, thumbs down, you can send feedback to them. So I would encourage everyone to do that rather than trying to pick a fight with a non-sentient robot.
Because it doesn't get bored, does it? It just keeps replying.
It just gets fed up with you, and then next time you put a question and it give you a completely wrong answer.
Okay, I don't think it does that. Just to pin you down, Steve. Sorry, and you just, maybe you don't, but and I don't know anything about it, but Sparrow is coming fast, isn't it, from Google? And one of the points is people are highlighting is that Google are addressing the need for accurate scientific citation, and they seem to be focused on the medical scientific arena. I don't know much more than that, except it's coming very fast. Does anybody know anything that's worth adding into that conversation, or should we just flag the fact for people that there's other stuff and things like Sparrow coming?
I think you're right. I think they're going to pick off industrial sectors. And as I said in that note I put out, life sciences is going to be a big one. So I think they're going to have a checklist of things they go through. I think they're going to say to pharma and other, you know, our research organizations, if you want to put the total amount of your knowledge in your own sort of garden wall of GPT, and then your whole team, your whole company, all your, you know, all your people who work with you can access that in natural language rather than trying to seek out specific data. So there is business to be had. They will have to meet these situations and liabilities. So that's what we're waiting for.
Right. I've got a couple of quick questions I'm going to throw at you. See, we've got enough, but I just want to get these 2 points in. There's been a lot of chat in here about plagiarism. It's not plagiarism. It's wrong way to look at this. And that's why the plagiarism detectors and so on are completely useless, because it's not plagiarizing content. It's not going somewhere and going, I'll copy this. Yes. It's generative. And that's a really important point. Just say a word on that, Katya, because there's a
difference between it's generative AI, and that means it creates from you, it knows already whatever is there. So you can't detect it with plagiarism detectors, with the classical ones, but of course they also will develop. And there are tools out there which detect already ChatGPT and all other generated content, but will it be implemented in the ones we use on a regular basis, or do we also have to have 5 subscriptions for plagiarism checkers?
Right. So it's good. Again, I'm just being quick now, but that's another point. And again, has anyone got an opinion on this? We're all probably making an assumption that there's, and I think, Steve, you've been talking about the business model and so on. You know, this is the one free one that we're all having a bit of fun with, but there's a sort of an expectation with Microsoft chucking $10 billion behind it. But what does that do in terms of inclusivity? You know, does it mean that actually only the companies or people with lots of money, let's simplify things, you know, can access tools like this? You know, think about it in academia or education as opposed to what we're doing. You know, if you've got access to a tool like this to help you write your essays or do your, you know, versus the people or, you know, who haven't, it just seems like there's a, because I'm coming at this from the point of view, this is a complete game changer. I'm thinking inclusivity or exclusivity is going to become an issue if suddenly they whack a price on the front of this. Just to finish with, has anyone got any couple of comments? And then we'll wrap up the recording. But has anyone got a comment or a thought on that side of things? If not, no problem. But I find that an interesting area to think about.
I can just add something about the sort of plagiarism issue, which is OpenAI are saying they can watermark the output statistically. So bear that in mind, that you know, you can run, but you can't hide. They will be able to, your clients will be able to, I think, say, well, you know, this is GPT originated. I mean, I would just say, you know, I've got competency in using ChatGPT. That's the way to go. Don't try and fight it, you know, so that everything it produces, you check. That's a role for Medcons. You are the gatekeepers of what rubbish might come out of these things. And you're just as you would take information from the internet and one way or the other put it into your comms data, you can now add to your CV. Someone mentioned this earlier. You know, I use ChatGPT, I'm competent in it, and we sign everything off through a human. And that way you just increase your throughput then.
I think, and what is it, the term, we're all looking for the first job ads? I mean, I don't know, Katya, you're going to call yourself a prompt engineer? Is that going to get traction?
There are writers in but still it is only as good as whatever you fed the system to begin with. So whatever the prompt engineer does, it can only come up with whatever was fed in. And what will happen if we feed a lot of bad stuff? Shit will come out. Sorry that I say it like that, but I think that will sum it up.
I can see no one's going to pick up on the inclusivity type discussion, which is fascinating.
No, I can't. No, I can make a comment. Very quick, because I saw another one where there, I think ChatGPT has blocked out Ukraine and a few other countries where they say because of various other reasons. So I think even without the payment, they're already wading into this whole controversy. And I saw a comment on carbon footprint and somebody said ChatGPT with every query it responds to uses 70% of carbon footprint of a Danish person in a year, which I thought was pretty interesting. I want to finish off for everybody to remember about the ethics side of things. You know, a psychiatry organization using this to auto-generate responses or query responses to mental health patients, again, strict. This is something without informed consent. It's a different game altogether, even if it's just for generating a first draft or a draft response. Whether that same thing applies to something less sensitive than others, and I think that's up for debate. But I think the frameworks and regulations of guidelines and guidances will have to be revisited once and if this becomes viral.
Okay, guys, we're way over time. Well, I'm thoroughly enjoying myself, but what I'm going to do, to be clear to the audience today, I'm going to stop the recording, say thank you very much to you guys. I'm going to encourage everyone to talk to each other. People in the audience, I know I can speak for the panelists and say you're all very happy to have people contacting you via LinkedIn. So please do. Please do join the discussion. Use hashtag MedComms and join in. I think there will be people watching this in a few weeks' time, let alone a few months' time, who will think it's all been quite quaint and quite sweet how we're talking about this, naive maybe, you know, because I think the developments are happening so fast technically, but also people's approaches to it. That's what is starting to interest me, how people are developing policies and ideas on how to embrace this, rather than last week when people were going, it's ridiculous, it's just, it should just be killed. Now it's how do we embrace it? How do we move on? Okay, I had so much more I wanted to talk about today. But anyway, I'm going to stop. I'm going to say thank you to everyone, audience and panelists. I'm going to close the recording and I'm just going to ask if anybody's interested in what the heck I'm doing, medcomsnetworking.com. I've just got to get that little plug in at the end. I'm going to close the recording.